Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Many thanks for joining us this morning, and welcome to our H1 results presentation. I know many of you follow Diaceutics already, but just a couple of quick reminders, I think, at the top of the meeting as to kind of our goal and our mission and indeed what we will go through today. So, you know, our focus is very much on removing the diagnostic hurdles to precision medicine treatment. And the way that we've conceived that at this moment in time is through the launch of a diagnostic commercialization platform, which seeks to combine three really important components. Obviously, relationships with leading pharma companies, and we have 39 pharma clients on our books, connecting those directly with the labs and diagnostic partners that can change clinical care at the front line, and to inform all of that with real world data so that everybody is making precise decisions around how to remove the diagnostic hurdles. What I hope to do today is to go through where we are on our roadmap towards building a high technology, high margin business. And with that in mind, if I just kind of go to the next slide, let's just focus back for a second on the issue that we are addressing. But there are a raft of new precision medicines coming to market. In fact, there is a transformation, particularly of oncology pipelines, underway towards targeted drugs, but increasingly beyond cancer. The issue, however, is that up to 50% of the patients do not get access to those drugs, largely because of the diagnostic hurdles that we've identified over time. And as a result of that, the pharmaceutical industry is obviously losing market share, losing money from that, as well as the obvious clinical impact. What we've done with the platform is to really conceive an integrated systems integration approach to that, where we're combining a networking of the labs that matter, together with the data that will inform those decisions, and ultimately to make sure that we've created a marketplace for collaboration to remove those diagnostic hurdles. The big impact of that is both on our pharma clients, where there's a high return on investment. We believe that by the removal of these hurdles, there's at least a $30 to $60 treatment impact for every dollar that is spent on removing those hurdles. And of course, the obvious message, patients will get more care sooner, and I think that's good for everybody. We've set out our roadmap. Many of you have been following it already. And, you know, just to reflect here that we've been building our position, our first mover advantage, if you like, for over 15 years. In that time, we built trust with a client base. We've gathered and collected data direct from source. And equally importantly, we've identified the labs who can move clinical care quickly. That was a position that we built through what I would describe as a consulting-esque business model. But through the enablement of the IPO and subsequent funding, we've converted that into a platform business model. And we're in the first substantial year of rolling that platform out. And just to remind you, we launched in October last year. So as the results that we're reporting are only 8 months in to this roadmap. And so what we need, what we want to do today is to really ask, where are we on year one in promoting our hands-on experience of the platform? Where are we in bringing those labs online from offline relationships? Where are we with bringing high-value partners so that they can collaborate along with ourselves, our labs, and our pharma partners in removing the hurdles? And indeed, have we started to see the financial benefits from this platform? And I'll come back and talk about subsequent years later on in the presentation. So the first thing I want to do is to really communicate how this is transforming our business. And the best way to do that is to walk you through an example. This is an example we shared initially back in March when this project was being conceived. And I want to update you on how this particular program is unfolding, because it absolutely represents what is changing about our business and indeed about how we're engaging with our clients. Quick reminder. So these are two pharmaceutical companies collaborating on addressing the rollout of a new drug in breast cancer. Back in 2019, we shared data with these two pharma clients to illustrate to them that the pathologist who would be critical in interpreting the test upon which this drug is dependent were overconfident and therefore would miss many patients. So the data journey with this client, that kind of initial landing in their heads as to what the issue was, started way back in 2019. But as we brought the solution to the table through the platform, what we've identified was a 10 to 12 month program, which would have us bring 60 of the most influential labs in all of the important markets. This is a global program, and the little dots on the right-hand side on the map illustrate the markets that we're approaching this in. We would collect the data at the baseline, that initial exhaust data coming out of this program to inform where we're at. We would develop a change management program that was fit for purpose. In this instance, it was retraining pathologists to read this new diagnostic. And indeed, we would bring stakeholder collaboration. Critical to moving the needle here quickly is to make sure that we can align everybody at the same time, not in sequence, but rather in parallel. And this collaboration sees labs, our pharma clients, and indeed one or two diagnostic partners that we brought into the platform to really move the needle. As we moved that needle over time, the intention was that in 10 to 12 months, we would have these 60 labs up and running, ready to receive this drug, which is actually poised to be launched as we speak. So where are we on that program? Well, pleased to say that we've got 60 labs on board. In fact, there are 80 pathologists in those 10 countries up and running. We've also installed a 6-person advisory board. As many of you will know, it's really important that the quality of what we're doing here is both regulatory ready, proof, if you like, and ultimately will lead to a publication of impact. So that advisory board is key important to us, and we brought that on board. They are supervising the rollout of this program. We've extracted the first baseline data, that first what we call exhaust data, to understand where patient testing is at from the beginning. All the lab training is booked, actually happening as we speak. There's been weekly client engagement both with the client. More importantly, for the first time, our pharma clients can actually see what's unfolding in front of them. How many labs are on board? What's the baseline look like? How are we converting? How that training is going? That level of control that they've not had before. We've also begun to look at how we will expand this program beyond the current scope of work. And I think that's also important. Part of this is to pursue a kind of a global long-term relationships. We've seen in our, what we call the Diaceutics Classic, we can live with these brands up to 5 or 6 years. So this begins a journey with this particular therapy brand. And impact is really important here, demonstrating that what would normally take 3 or 4 years to change, we can do in 10 to 12 months. So part of this will be to make sure that we bring an impact study back to the market, likely to be published in mid next year alongside our pharma clients. Philip, I don't know whether you want to comment on how this impacts us.
Yeah, in terms of the finances, total program value, 750,000, multi-modular. And if we look at the high margin modules is network access fee and data subscription, 90% and plus margin there, X amortization. A blend of technology-enabled services, again, good margin, 74% X amortization, blending up to an 80% plus margin. But in addition to that, we are adding laboratories to our network and the benefit that has to the platform. We are also, as Peter touched on, acquiring data and receiving exhaust data, adding that data to our data lake. So transforming our business model, we'll come to that in my section.
Okay, if we zoom out a little bit from this one particular project, which I think demonstrates the kind of multifaceted touch points that it has with our business and indeed with our clients' business. Where are we with platform adoption curve? And again, look, really pleased with the progress in the first year. Those of you who will observe platform companies know that those initial kind of market impressions are critically important to the long-term trajectory of that. And I think as far as we're concerned, we're really pleased with that. 15 clients now engaged on projects for the platform. Remember what I said earlier, it's about hands-on use. Getting our clients to roll up their sleeves and walk with us here is as important as anything else. Pleased to see that's happening. That's broadly half of the large clients that we have. And as we're bringing and approaching new clients and new client projects, we're starting and leading with DXRX as a solution. We're now recruiting a run rate of about 10 new labs a week. Now, we've had these offline lab relationships for many years, over 8 years, in fact. So moving them online at a pace is really important to us. The more labs we have on, the more collaboration, the more exhaust data that we're collecting. And we're really pleased with the progress that we've made there. Collaborations. Pharma wants to see everybody kind of co-opted into creating these solutions and that they're not a single line of point. And again, through the concept of the platform, we're showing how those collaborations can really move the needle. And we've several of those kind of big, broad approach collaborations up and running. You probably saw an announcement on another one that we announced yesterday morning. And of course, this isn't just about labs and pharma. It's about bringing a marketplace of diagnostic partners, people who can help labs, who can help training, who can help the quality assurance that is going on. And we've been actively recruiting these. Sarah Kerr is another US-based high-end, high-profile diagnostic commercialization partner that we can bring into the marketplace to support us. Helps keeps our margins high because we then don't have to build that back office service. At the same time, we're making sure that Sarah Kerr are an active partner in the platform. So all the components of the platformization up and running. In terms of the data, we constantly are building the data. We'll come back later on and talk about the diagnostic deductive pathways that we're building in the background, which are all about future product coming out of that. And we've another new data product coming out in quarter four this year. But the 312 labs that are now plugged into the platform are actively providing that new data, what we call exhaust data, that data that we can then feedback loop back into our overall data lake. We've added 44 million data records. And one of the things that this is doing is allowing us to improve the insights that we're bringing to the market. It's not about the data, it's about the unique insights that we can create. And again, we want to make an impact there. How is this data really transforming an understanding of the hurdles and the opportunities in the space? So great to see those new data records coming into play. In terms of market awareness, you know, from our point of view, pharma wants to see impact. It wants to know that we can use that data to identify what the real hurdles. Precise investment is a key part of making sure that we have a cost-effective solution here. In previous years, we would have two or three data presentations accepted. Pleased to say that with the platform enabling a faster machine learning of our data, we've already had approval for 9 key disease insights that will be published through this year. Big and important part of supporting our campaigns back into pharma and indeed reaching into new therapy assets that we know are coming towards us for which this data is relevant. And we're also lead investigator on a study with the Personalized Medicine Coalition. This is an industry body that collaborates broadly with the who's who of precision medicine. And one of the things that we've noticed over the years is we at Diaceutics have been saying there is significant patient leakage. What we've conceived here is that we will bring everybody to the same conclusion by working in the study. The study work has been done, and we hope to publish that starting in November of this year. As I said, 50% of the patients we believe are leaking from a treatment opportunity. And what we want to do is to make that an industry observation, not just a Diaceutics observation. It'll be a landmark study for us. Another component of our platform was not just to serve pharma, but obviously to start to reach into other significant diagnostic and healthcare partners who are feeding into and from the precision medicine diagnostic pathway. So pleased to say that our first large diagnostic company has bought a kind of a chunk of critical data, which it will use to help support the commercialization of its diagnostic. And indeed, I think that's a key important part of our kind of growth strategy as we go forward. So really good progress, I think, right across the platform, really good traction. If I zoom out, just to kind of summarize, so quick kind of KPIs before I hand over to Philip to get into some of the numbers. 22 client projects already enabled by DXRX. representing about 40%, 44% of our revenue in H1. You know, our expectation going into this year was like 20% adoption of the platform was a really good goal. Pleased to say that we're well over that milestone. And indeed, as we sit in quarter three, we can see that that trend is set to continue as we go through the rest of the year. I've mentioned the labs registered, I've mentioned the partners. One other component is, remember, what we're building here is a high-tech, high-margin business. We're taking a consulting-esque approach where margins that we've observed elsewhere are 50 and 60%, and we're turning that into a 70% margin business. So we've already begun to see those labor efficiencies. We've already enjoyed and benefited from increasing pricing as a result of the new utility that's coming from our data, where clients are able to download in seconds what would take them weeks and give access to those data insights in a way that they haven't done before. So all the component parts of that platform adoption, we believe, are kind of up and running as we speak. But let's get into some of the numbers behind that story.
Before we get into the numbers, Peter has touched on some of the benefits of how the platform is transforming a business model, and I want to bring this together on this slide. And as we walk through the little graphic on the right, I want you to think about the scalability and the scale the platform brings to our business, but also the fact that the network effect, in that the more the platform is used, the more powerful it becomes. So starting at the top right-hand side with onboarding clients and laboratories onto the platform, we are actively doing that. And as Peter said, we are making great progress in 15 clients onboarded onto the platform. And we then carry out projects, carry out those multiple modules, those high margin 90% plus within the data, 74 plus in the tech-enabled services. That then generates data for the platform, both in acquired data, purchase data, but also in exhaust data, creating an ingestion tool for real-world evidence, increasing the insights for our clients, applying our intellectual property to that data, increases the breadth of our insights. And ultimately, you know, our strategy is to attract more pharma clients and attract more drug brands, and also embedding ourselves within those existing and clients. And the cycle continues. Looking at some of the additional benefits on the left, we are transitioning to a subscription revenue model with better quality of earnings. We've touched on the scalability, the high gross margins attached to our modules. The additional modules themselves provide an opportunity for adding value to our clients. It also benefits us as a business in that we're extracting more of that share of wallet. Peter touched on the efficiency of the data. Bringing labs from an offline position online allows for that automatic data ingestion, which allows for efficiencies. And we see another network effect in that the more laboratories that are added to the platform, we see a pull factor with other laboratories wanting to join the platform. And finally, there are some short to medium term upsides. We are pursuing revenue channels for data companies, laboratories, and we have won our first contract with a diagnostic company. So zooming out for a moment and looking at the H1 performance, very pleased with this H1 performance, and walking through the charts from left to right, looking at our revenue has increased by 13% in pound terms. That's against a significant foreign exchange headwind. And if we look at the constant currency, our revenue has increased by 24%. Our margin has improved from 71% to 74%. Pleased with that, we'll go into the detail behind what's shifting within that gross margin. Our EBITDA position is slightly up on the prior year. That is a product of the continued investment in our BD and legal and compliance. And our closing cash has decreased from last year. Again, that's a product of the investment in the platform, the continued investment in the platform. And a strong cash position, more than enough cash to see out the continued development of the platform over the next 2 years. But it's also important for us to have a level of cash supportive, allowing our clients to see a strong balance sheet as we pursue and contract ever-increasing total contract value proposals. So zooming in on some of the numbers, I refer to the table on the left as I walk down the points on the right. In terms of our revenue growth, we've touched on that. You'll see that in the table, 13% in pound terms, 24% in a constant currency basis. And the driver behind that revenue growth is the volume of modules that we have sold to our clients. And Peter touched on a point, our total contract value in dollar terms has increased by 28%. And that's something that we're seeing even within our pipeline of business currently. 44% of our total revenues are delivered on the platform. Again, very pleased with this adoption, and we're beginning to see that positive impact and beginning to hit the financials. Our platform have rebalanced from the seasonality. If you remember, historically, the seasonality of our business was weighted towards the back end, H2. So we had a H1 30%, H2 70% revenue seasonality. That created a risk for the business, a risk in that 70% of our revenue had to be delivered in the back end of the year. We're pleased that we see a balancing 44% of our revenue in H1. And it's important to note we are still guiding towards our 13.6 million guidance. Our key regions supporting growth, the US has increased by 20%. The EU has rebounded again post-COVID, increasing by 82%. We continue to invest in Asia. We continue to support our existing clients in Asia as we build out that business there and target those indigenous and pharma companies in that region. Looking at our gross margin has increased by 300 basis points to 74%. You'll see it in the table, increasing from 71%, an increase of 4%. And that's after amortization. We have amortized the platform per last year, and that's creating an 11% drag on margin in the period. But what's offsetting that, you'll see in the table also, the gross margin excluding amortization. We are using less labor within our cost of sales, 15% more efficient in terms of labor, and that's offsetting the amortization that we see there and ultimately resulting in an improved gross margin. Looking at our administration costs, you'll see in the table increasing from 3.8 to 5.1. A lot of moving within the administration costs as we move costs from our old business towards our platform business. But we'll call out some of the additionality in terms of the costs. We are investing in BD and the sales commission structure, 300,000. Legal and compliance, again, investing in contracting with our clients and also data compliance. The more material factor in terms of that swing was a reversal in a prior year foreign exchange gain of 700,000 into a loss of 100,000. That pretty much flows down into a balanced EBITDA of 300,000 versus 300,000 in the prior year. If we then touch on our tax credit position, we continue to claim tax credits in UK and Ireland. We have a $500,000 tax credit for the period. It's consistent with prior year. There was a 600,000 catch-up credit within that period, resulting in a profit after tax of 300,000 negative, something we're not concerned about as we are guiding to a positive position here. Before I leave this slide, I'll touch on the, in terms of the R&D tax credit, what does that mean? You will note there's a £2 million tax debtor on the balance sheet, £1.5 million of which we will receive in cash terms over the next 6 months. Moving to our balance sheet, again, pleased with a strong balance sheet. We've made some key investments in the period in terms of platform and data. The table on the left is an extract from the interim showing the intangible assets at cost. It also shows trade receivables and our cash position. The little chart below that shows the actual expenditure, the intangible expenditure in the period. The blue represents 2020, purple represents current period. So if we look at the overall investment in intangibles, we spent 2.8 million in the period. And if we look at our chart in terms of the platform investment, we have invested 1.4 million, which is down in the previous year. And that's, you know, we've launched the platform And so we're spending less. We're developing, as Peter touched on, those four additional modules, which are on budget and set for launch in Q4. We've increased our investment in data. We spent £1 million on data versus 650,000 in the prior year. We've added 44 million patient records. But more importantly, we are receiving more granular data and we're receiving more timely data. Previously, we received monthly data. We are now receiving weekly data, and that enhances our product, our client offering. New category on the list of intangibles is DDPs. We've invested 200,000 in DDPs, and that is around creating structure and algorithms around that very important patient pathway. We will continue to develop out our DDPs for the rest of this year. In terms of our trade receivables, we've improved our trade receivables, resulting ultimately in a positive cash from operations of 1.3 million. If we take the positive 1.3 against the overall investment in intangibles, the total outflow in cash terms for the period is 1.5 million. So to conclude, strong balance sheet position, good management of working capital, and key investments into intangibles, which are on time and on budget. Peter.
Thanks, Philip. And again, important to go through that detail so that you can see the, I suppose, the flow of platformization through into the financial capabilities of the business model. So we're delighted to see some of those numbers coming through. I want to spend a few slides sort of a little bit with more of an outlook discussion, then we'll open up for Q&A. Look, it's very clear that Diaceutics was about trying to call a change in a marketplace, a tipping point, if you like, in precision medicine. And I think what we see today is that diagnostic commercialization is all about pharma wanting to outsource that. Yes, there are some teams within pharma that are seeking to do some of this themselves, but ideally they want this to be taken away from them and a proper solution brought to the market. I think we're there with that. Digital, we've all witnessed in our own lives as well as in the companies that we follow, that digitalization has accelerated. And again, I think this has really helped us in terms of receptivity of our platform play as we've approached pharma. Scalability. Pharma doesn't want a solution in one country for one asset. It wants a permanent, cost-effective solution for multi-markets. So you had to conceive this as a scalable solution. Again, part of our platform play was to bring that scalability offering to our clients. We're not really interested in one therapy, one biomarker. We're interested in 7, 8, 9, or as in the case of some of our clients, 50 plus therapy assets that are sitting in their pipeline that will need what we do. Another key component, pharma has often said, why are we having to carry this burden of removing diagnostic hurdles on our own? Where are the diagnostic companies? Where are the labs? Where are the clinical community? And of course, they are all equally wanting to solve this problem. By bringing this together into a platform, we finally have a dialogue going on between all the players that can change clinical care, unlock that clinical benefit, unlock that financial benefit. And all of that has to be wrapped up in real world evidence. We're not conjecturing, we're not analoging here. We're showing precisely where the hurdles are, the benefit of removing those hurdles, and the ability to really change a kind of a debate that's going on in the background. Is this really a problem? Absolutely, it is a problem. And here's how we go about fixing it. So from our point of view, the platform play and the way we've conceived that is where the market is walking towards us as we roll that out. So I think that's the big picture situation. Come back to the strategic roadmap. We've talked about this year being one of hands-on, bringing early adopter labs. You can see for yourself our progress against that, albeit in the first 8 months as we're reporting out here. We understand that what pharma wants to see here is, can we move something that takes 3 to 4 years? Can we do that in 8 to 9 to 10 months? That's what they want to see. So the collaborations that you will see us reporting out on are all about creating that multi-stakeholder approach to show that visible impact. I believe we're on track to do that as we go into next year. And when we do that, that domino falls over to a position where a farm says, okay, you are the preferred supplier here, in order to put that in place. And it is that which allows us to become an embedded enterprise solution. Of course, along the way, we will expand our client base. Of course, along the way, we will look for other ways in which that platform can create a vibrant marketplace. But ultimately, we are on a three-year adoption curve. And what we need to be evaluated on is our progress towards that. So I'm pleased. I think we're really well on target there. A couple of things to look out for. In October last year, we launched what we described as a minimum viable product, enough to get us started. And I think the progress that you've seen is the benefit of calling, you know, the modules and the priorities that we put in place then. As we sit at the moment, we're introducing a couple of other, I think, really exciting components to the business. We've been collecting new data at a more granular level, as Philip has said, at a more frequent level. And that allows us for the first time to introduce observations at a patient level. So it used to be at a lab level, it used to be then at a physician level, and now we're introducing that at a patient level. To be able to follow anonymized patients, how they have individually had their journey, is a key gold component to allowing our pharma clients to really understand at a highly granular level how this is denying or accessing patients onto their drugs. That module will be launched in quarter four this year. We're allowing our labs to benchmark against one another. This isn't about sucking data out of the labs. It's also about bringing the labs on that journey. Here's where you sit in your own kind of quality and commercial ecosystem within that. Be a big part of the value proposition back to labs. Ultimately, when you have a network of 2,500 labs connected into the platform, ultimately what we've done is build a channel to market. We can broadcast through that channel. We'll be bringing forward our first module to allow us to do that broadcast, where we'll be able to communicate to all those labs connected, not in months or quarters, but in minutes. And that really solves a big problem for our labs who says, we've not been part of this debate. We don't know what's going on. Well, we will keep them up to date and allow us to really move the needle quickly. Test reimbursement, finally, probably the single biggest nightmare in the diagnostic ecosystem. And the way that we've done that is to start with a first phase module here, which will allow people to collaborate in removing that hurdle, customized to each of the markets, because reimbursement is different in each of the markets. So super excited to see that second kind of foray into the market, and it allows us to go after more of our clients' wallet, as well as starting to really build that full comprehensive end-to-end approach. And I think as we sit, again, it's about how are we progressing against that roadmap? Have we really begun to move that and see that adoption curve? Have we got the key components of a platform model starting to fuse through our business? And ultimately, are our clients engaged? Are our labs engaged? And hopefully what you can see here is we really see the positive traction with that. Pretty well set up, I think, as we go into next year and beyond. Okay. That's all we wanted to kind of take you through. I'm happy for Philip and I to answer any questions.
And we'll go to Christian Glennie at Stifel.
Thanks. Kick off then, please, with some bit more insight, if we can, in terms of this transition onto the DXRX platform. It looks like things are going pretty well, slightly ahead of schedule there. I guess in terms of the pharma clients, 15 of so just under half of kind of your existing base. Has there been any sort of pushback? I mean, is that just a feature of just natural rolling out of it and to the key clients, or has there been any particular pushback from any pharma clients that may not have gone for it? And maybe that's a phasing thing with their portfolio or whatever, but any insight there is that, in terms of that rollout into pharma?
Yeah, the quick answer to that is no. And a couple of things have helped us there, Christian. The first thing I would say is we've actually introduced we took the opportunity at kind of coming out the back end of last year to tell all of our clients what we were doing. So they are all aware of it. It's obviously about, you know, promoting the right time engagement with the client about the burning bush that they have in front of them, and that's what we've done. We kind of bring the DXRX solution back to them at the right time. One other thing that's really important here is, you know, this isn't just about the introduction of a platform. It's about moving the kind of T's and C's of engagement with our client away from that old project-based through a kind of, for the first time, a licensing structure, which sets us up for kind of long-term subscriptions and platform network fees. A lot of work has gone underneath the hood on that. And that's where you would probably pick up the sensitivity of your pharma clients pushing back. Yes, we've had to work through different functions within procurement. They start to introduce the kind of, you know, there's a platform section of procurement. We brought all those people on board, and our legal and compliance department worked really hard to move that needle. So I think overall, no pushback. Secondly, I think we are setting up those previous master services agreements for us to really remove what would have been probably a procurement hurdle as we go forward. And I, you know, I don't really envisage that we will have pushback. We are probably helped by the digital kind of march coming from COVID. Hard to rate exactly by how much, but it certainly, you know, we have one of our clients, a leading UK pharma company, whose key requirement now is that every proposal that comes back at them has to have a digital component in it. So again, that's helpful, and that's hugely supportive of the kind of the kind of leading indicators for us as we see this market moving.
Thanks. And then I guess switching to the lab partners adoption onto the getting them online onto the platform, you're talking about an acceleration there, 10 a week. But just to give a bit of context for, you know, how far does that go? You know, I mean, is it yeah. You know, you've got 2,500 right in total out there. You know, what is the realistic sort of conversion onto online?
Well, I think ultimately, you know, to us, it is kind of reaching that steady state. We've certainly prioritized through this year the labs that will give us the greatest kind of patient coverage, and it's probably a little bit of a Pareto rule here at Christian, in that, you know, 80% even of the labs within the 2,500 network will give us coverage in many of the diseases. The ones that we've on board certainly are giving us north of 50 to 60% patient coverage in the diseases that we're serving at the minute. And the lab team, as they're recruiting labs, are very much focused on, okay, we see projects coming down the pike, and both from our pharma pipelines as well as our own sales team, where are the labs that we need to bring on board so that we're out in front of that? 10 a week, you know, it takes time to move these labs from a position where they've not really been networked before to a position of being networked. I think we're over a lot of those initial questions, and now it's a case of just moving through that list. Ultimately, I think we do want at least 80% of those 2,500 labs on board. We've given ourselves 3 years. I think we've got a good steady state approaching those clients. And I think the other component there is, you know, labs, particularly outside the United States, have always been very wary of sharing data. It's been a difficult and awkward conversation. And a lot of our competitors who are trying to get lab data do this through primary care, primary market research, which is very erratic. For us, what we've got here are labs willing to provide the data because they're part of a collaboration in fixing it. And so I think there's more going on than just, have we moved you from a phone call relationship and a meeting relationship to you are actively engaging in the platform. So I think we're pleased with the run rate.
Great, thank you. And then could it be worth exploring these, you know, some of the significant contract wins and things you've been having on the back of the DRxRx platform? You know, you'd give an example there about 700K for this particular one in with a couple of pharma companies. Then you've got others which are sort of around the sort of $1 million ticket items. You've been talking about in the last few months. I guess just for some perspective, how does that compare to where you were maybe sort of a couple of years ago, obviously pre-DRxRx platform? And as you get those bigger ticket items, you know, what is any pushback, or is you feel like that return on investment case that you're making to these companies is you know, they go for it. You know, there's no real pushback there.
Maybe if we both answer them, just let me set up. Remember, we believe for diagnostic commercialization, we're really observing how much is pharma prepared to spend per therapy brand. And we see in our kind of history of client engagement, you know, some will spend as low as $3 million to solve these problems. Some will spend north of $50 million. The direction of travel is to spend more to remove the hurdles. Our leading therapy brand that we've been dealing with over 5 years, we're up around $7 million extracted from that therapy brand. But that we started that journey 4 or 5 years ago. Where we're sitting today is all the offerings that we were kind of building over time, we're now in a position to offer those today. And it really opens up that opportunity to go after those larger projects. Philip, do you want to comment on the pushback part of that?
I'll just touch on, I think it's night and day. Christian, you know, selling a $100,000 landscape to $1 million solution selling that we're doing now. So it's we're engaging with our clients in a more meaningful way. And if we look at the most recent RNS, engaging with that client for a solution for 2021, but also discussing 2022 and 2023 needs. I think there's more client confidence which the platform brings. Again, you know, with the data lake and the insights, we've created a one-stop sort of shop. And our clients are responding positively to that.
And I maybe just one anecdote. So we had a management meeting recently. I pulled up a presentation that we'd given to a leading West Coast pharma company, West Coast US pharma company, back in 2014, where in essence, we knew what the problem was. And we said, you as that company should invest in the solution. And actually, we suggested the solution was a platform play for this particular disease area. And our problem way back then was that we couldn't bring that solution to the table. And pharma said, well, look, that's not our business. Our business is launching drugs. Where we are at the minute is that we're not saying someone else will solve that for you. What we're saying is now we've got this. We have the comprehensive system integration approach that can bring that solution to the table. Pharma wants to outsource this, Christian. It doesn't want to build big diagnostic behemoths, with the exception possibly of Roche. And what it needed was somebody that it could trust and rely upon to create that solution. And I don't think there's pushback here. I think there's verification and validation that we can do what it says on the tin, which is why I'm saying the collaborations that we have this year will lead to the impact and evidence for next year. So it's a bit of a journey, but once they have that, okay, you did this, you moved what was going to be a 4-year problem to a 10-month solution. Once they have that in their pocket, I think it kind of knocks down another domino for us. I think we're focused on the right things.
Okay, thank you. I'll get back in the queue.
Thank you. And we have a written question now. What impact is COVID still having on pharma purchasing behaviour?
Yeah, great question. I'll put an umbrella here of there's still caution out there. I think you probably have seen that across the entire industry and healthcare industry. Having said that, the issue that we suffered from this time last year was unpredictability, and that our pharma clients, you know, said they were going to do something in August and then stopped. That predictability has returned, and we saw it returning in the first half of this year. And that we can work with that predictability because there are still urgent things that need to be solved, and pharma is spending towards that. Do we believe that they've taken the cap off those budgets yet? No, I don't think they have. There's still prioritization and allocation going on within pharma. They too recognize that they were subject to patients staying away from hospital for their on-market brands, and that does drive budgeting behavior for pharma. So I think there's caution, but planning and a kind of a effective budgeting, that's what we're living through at the minute. I think we're benefiting from that predictability. So there's still an impact. I also believe, and this is more conjecture on our part, really, but the you know, the 2 to 3 million patients that stayed away from cancer care in the early part of 2020 did not go away. And those patients will present back, possibly at later stages of disease, where pharma, you know, will benefit. And I think the dialogue with our pharma clients is one of, these patients will come back, there will be an increased demand on testing infrastructure, and you need to be ready for that. So it's almost like we've got caution at the minute, but there's also planning, and that planning is healthy, and I think it's realistic.
Thank you. And another written question, how much more investment is required into the platform? Are the next 4 modules the last, or will there be more?
Yeah, in terms of investment in the platform, we've provisioned £6 million for this year, thus reducing to £4 million in 2022 and £3 million in 2023. And if we consider that, you know, £2 million of that is around data, we are seeing a reduction in the investment in the platform, really moving to £2 million in 2022 and £1 million in 2023. That's allowing us a runway to what we call a steady state in 2023, where we are investing £3 million against an amortization ticket of approximately £3 million. In terms of the modules, that's the modules complete for now, subject to client demand in the future. But we're allowing ourselves a runway until we hit our steady state in 2023.
Thank you. And another written question, is there any geography that's underrepresented in your business at the moment in which you see potential?
Yeah, I don't think it's a secret. We continue to invest out in APAC. You know, China alone is a very, very significant market opportunity in two ways. One is that there are indigenous Chinese pharmaceutical companies starting to collaborate and play in the US market theater. You know, it's interesting, when we look at the pipelines, some 40% of new drugs in certain disease areas are coming from Chinese pharmaceutical companies. I mean, it's phenomenal to watch what's happening there. And those are early stage drugs, but there's clearly a tsunami being built up there. So for us, it's right sizing our business ultimately in APAC. Our focus in APAC is Australia, Japan, Korea, and indeed China. There are other markets in there, South Korea. But ultimately, what we want to do is to continue to build to that level of demand. We've historically been supporting the rollout of brands that were launched, you know, in the United States, into Europe and into APAC. Increasingly, what we're doing is we're looking at brands that are being, a business that's being generated by both indigenous companies and multinational companies in those regions, and supporting that out. So we'll continue to build there. And probably if you look at Latin America, Brazil continues to be an important market for pharma. And we continue to, I think, want to right size our coverage of that market. Elsewhere, great to see Europe kind of from a business come back on track because of the push through COVID. So I think it's kind of the APAC and a bit of LATAM where our focus will continue to grow.
Thank you. We'll go back to Christian Glennie at Stifel.
Yeah, just thought it was worth a follow-up. A bit more in terms of the commentary around the seasonality of the business, just to understand that a bit more. Obviously, there's the way you describe it, obviously there is a benefit in terms of being a bit more even than the very second half weighted nature that you had before. But just to, from your perspective, a bit more to what's the driver of that? Is there an element of whether it's any sort of revenue recognition based on the base of the new platform, or whether there's a change in customer behavior in terms of how they order effectively go for your services, if you like?
Yeah, Christian, we're seeing a more consistent buying pattern from our clients via the platform. And you know, you mentioned the seasonality. That's what the platform has brought. We in terms of H2, we see all of the early indicators of our business are very positive in terms of our total contract value, our pipeline. I do think we're still living through COVID. I if I was to say a phrase, it would be bullish and cautious as we move through H2. But happy, pleased with the more consistent pattern of our clients, and we are we're bullish and cautious for the second half of the year.
Okay, thank you. Great.
And that's the end of questions. Peter, do you have any closing remarks?
I again, remember, just kind of want to zoom out for a second. I think we've covered a lot of the underlying trends that are kind of driving the transformation of our business. We set out 15 years ago to create an opportunity to really change a marketplace that, in our view, is broken. This has been a real landmark year for us, not because of COVID. Obviously, that has been a backdrop, but the fact that we finally have in what I view as the right product, and I think the timing is right. I think ultimately the move to digitalization will serve us really well going forward. So for us, it's about driving adoption, and the focus of myself and my team are very much about taking the foundations that we've laid this year and just building upon them. This is a marketplace that's walking towards us, and what we want to do is to make sure that we're ready for the scalability that we feel is coming down the pike at us. And the final comment I would make is what pharma wants to see is real impact. A lot of pharma services will say, we promise this, it will do X and Y. The ability for pharma to observe itself, that it can take what is again, a 3 to 4 year lag in their business and reduce that down to 10 months, is hugely impactful. I believe the seeds of those stories are being laid down as we speak. And it's really interesting to hear the feedback of our clients saying things like, "Oh, we didn't realize you could do that," all the way through to is, "How do we roll this out into additional markets?" That's the language of a company that is doing the right thing. So look, we have a lot of work to do, but I think we've really taken this year as a year where we've set the foundation for growth.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.